Beginning 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is the Rain Report for the week of March 26, 2004. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN. If you live in a metropolitan area, frequently commute via expressways or freeways, or have visited national theme parks, you may have heard low-powered traveler information stations, or TIS, broadcasting below, within, and above the AM broadcast band. There are a couple of these transmitters near Dayton, Ohio. One of them transmits on 1610 kHz. During the upcoming Hamvention, come mid-May, visitors to the Dayton area may hear a pre-recorded announcement about directions to the Hera Arena. Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, caught up with Norm Schrein, KA8PGJ, who programs that station.
The FCC set up a service issuing licenses to local government entities, either cities, counties, states, and so forth, where they can do any number of things. One is, of course, to pass on information about road closures, detours, construction, and things like that. So a lot of times when you see these signs for these stations along the highways, that's what they're for. And if you tune them in, you may find that the station isn't even on the air because there is no particular hazard at that moment. Other stations are kind of site-specific. A lot of the national parks will use them, and they'll tell you tidbits about the parks, what, you know, what the admission rate is, if you have to pay an admission to get in, what special events may be happening in the park. Tends to be that the programming remains the same. Here in the Dayton area, there are actually two travelers information stations that can be easily heard at any one time. Ours on 1610 and another one at 1620 that's operated by the Convention and Visitors Bureau. The Convention and Visitors Bureau station has been playing the same 30-second message for the last 3 years. And, of course, what they're trying to do is hit people that are coming up and down the interstate so they hear this message as to what is to be offered in the Dayton area, but there's not a whole lot that you can say in 30 seconds, obviously. Our station, on the other hand, is designed more so for the local community than for the tourists passing through. So we work in conjunction with a lot of the local governments, many of the suburbs, their parks and recreation department, their cultural events groups. Basically, anybody can put an announcement on it as long as the announcement that they're putting on there is non-commercial in nature and it's an event that is open to the general public. Even events where, for example, money is charged to get into it, as long as it's not a commercial venture that it's being done by a Parks and Recreation Department. Say, for example, they're having the Civic Band play on the 4th of July, but there's a $5 admission for whatever. Those types of announcements are perfectly fine to put on that thing, as are other nonprofit agencies that if they're doing something for a fundraiser that's open to the public. And these are generally agencies and organizations that, number one, either don't have the money to put it onto a commercial station and have no really good way of reaching the public. So by putting it onto one of these travelers' information stations the way that we're operating it, gives them the opportunity to reach the community and to have their announcement run about once an hour, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, I mentioned the other travelers' information station in Dayton with their 30-second loop. Our loop runs about an hour long of all the different types of announcements that we have, and we're constantly changing them. So each day we'll delete two or three things and add two or three new things. And, of course, the whole thing's run by a computer using MP3 or WAV files or whatever. We have volunteers that read the material. Some people submit their own. The other unseen part of this station is its ability to be used in an emergency situation. So if there was some kind of an ongoing disaster, tornado or a flood or something like that, we can then pull the routine programming from the station and put in announcements specific to the disaster, whatever that would be, avoid this road, boil your water, or whatever. And in fact, we can actually go live from the station, from an emergency operations center or something else, and actually patch in live broadcast if we needed to.
What qualifies your company to program this station?
Basically, it's not something that most local governments want to fool with. They like the idea of the station. They don't like the idea of having to have an employee or somebody take the time to coordinate all this stuff and put it together. And so we actually just said, well, we will do it for you at no charge. And we will manage the station. We will engineer it, get it on the air. We had to have one of the governments hold the license, which wasn't a big deal. We had somebody, basically they had to fill out the form and sign on the line and be a government entity. It's really kind of a hassle-free thing for the government, and they are able to to get their word out. Of course, they also support us on the other side in that they put road signs up, you know, in the right-of-way. So where a regular commercial station might be able to buy a billboard someplace, they can't put a sign right in the roads right-of-way telling people to tune to the station for whatever the information is they want. So we have about 40 of these road signs throughout the Dayton area, sponsored by the different communities that we developed a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. And so that then is open to different grants and funding in the community, which are different sources depending on the types of things that we carry, whether it's through an emergency management agency or through an arts council or whatever. You could also see why nobody would ever want to do this in a commercial venture, because it's certainly not a moneymaker, you know. Basically, as long as we're able to pay the electric bill and keep the computers and that thing running. So it's not all that different from amateur radio in that regard, and it being a volunteer service. The FCC is very specific on the rules, on what you can and can't do as far as one of these stations feed information into the station. The antenna has to be a vertical antenna, and cannot be more than 50 feet in the air. The transmitter itself cannot exceed 10 watts. So that's the basics of it. And I think if you realize, of course, you know, 1610, for example, is pretty close to 160-meter band, 1.8 megahertz, a lot of amateur stuff there, and you realize, of course, the antennas for those things are way bigger than 50 feet. You could put a supporting structure on top of a 40-story building if you wanted to, but the supporting structure and the antenna total cannot be more than 50 feet. Okay, really, when it comes to AM, this type of stuff, I mean, you can put it up the air somewhat, but in the long run, it's not going to make a whole lot of difference. So the overall effectiveness of whether you're on top of a tall building or just operating at 50 feet above ground level is going to be kind of negligible, because as compared to like where it would make a difference on the 2-meter repeater, obviously, this stuff is not nearly as affected as the line of sight stuff is. So when we go down a big hill on 2 meters and the repeater starts to break up, you can go down a hill on this thing and it's no different than you were on top of the hill with it, because it's following that ground wave. So it operates a little bit differently.
What do you use for ground?
Well, that's where we got the advantage of being amateurs and trying to figure out, okay, these are the parameters we have to live with, 50 feet, 10 watts. So how can we get this thing to talk? The whole thing there is to have the thing well grounded, to make a good ground plane. 1610 and 1620, although they're in different locations, obviously they're several miles apart from each other, the 1610 station out-talks the 1620 considerably, yet they're both operating under the same parameters as far as the rules go. One's engineered a little bit better than the other.
You're listening to a Rain Report interview with Norm Schrein, KA8PGJ, who manages a Traveler's Information Station on 1610 kHz near Dayton, Ohio. Hap Holly will conclude this interview in a moment. This is the Rain Report.
You're listening to the Rain Report from www.rainreport.com.
How far do these 10-watt stations propagate at night?
You know, at night they actually tend to propagate less locally. I've had somebody tell us that they heard our station in Illinois, which is several hundred miles away. And there are people that actually DX these things and, you know, want QSL cards and things like that. I've never gotten any reports from anybody wanting that from me, other than one report that somebody heard us in Illinois. The problem that you encounter, say, for example, on 1610, well, there's hundreds of these stations on that frequency. And there's also some regular broadcast stations up in Canada on it and a couple here in the States. To hear that, you know, what exactly are you going to hear at night is probably a jumble of a lot of things, and you might be able to pull something out every now and then. There have been people who have tried to take this and actually turn it into a commercial broadcast venture, and usually that got squelched pretty quickly by the local broadcast media, you know, going to the FCC and complaining and so on. So some of these stations have been put on illegitimately, I suppose. I mean, they would get somebody to get the license for them, but they would not then follow the rules, and so that would end up coming back and haunting them. The FCC, you know, is very specific on what you're allowed to put on these things. 1610 is very popular because I think there's only one commercial station in the United States on that frequency. Now, there's others in Canada and whatnot. But basically, as long as you have a quiet frequency, you can go ahead and put it on there as long as you're not causing interference to something else. I'll give you an example. The one on 1620 here. So we're in Dayton, Ohio. There's a commercial broadcast station in South Bend, Indiana on 1620. Well, during the daytime, you don't hear it here in Dayton. But at night, you sure do. So the range of the 1620 station is considerably reduced because it's bumping heads against whatever this other, 10,000-watt station or whatever it is that's in South Bend. There are radios that are made specific for the use, all solid state. The thing is 24 volts that it runs on. So we put a 24-volt supply on the thing and just let it sit there and run. And this thing's been running without us doing a thing to it for 2 years.
I remember back before the extended portion of the AM broadcast band got its cluttered, I was actually hearing at night on 1640 the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport.
Yes, they're on 1640 and 1680. They're more than 10 watts. I think they're like 40 watts, and they got a special waiver on that, and I don't know what the reasons were behind the waiver, so they're actually running higher power. One of them, I don't know, 1640, say for example, gives you all the departing flights from a DFW airport, and 1680 gives you all the incoming flight information, gates and whatnot. And you can hear those things quite a ways. But there was some kind of a reason that they got a waiver to run the extra power, and I don't know what that is. But there's other things on 1640, regular 5,000-watt radio stations.
I want to go back a little bit to the antenna. If I understand you correctly, Norm, the antenna and antenna structure cannot total any more than 50 feet.
That's correct. They actually make specialized antennas for this service.
How long is the antenna actually itself?
Probably 12 feet, maybe. It's all big coil wound up and then all sealed over with fiberglass and whatnot. It's on the same tower, actually, as some ham antennas, and you'll see the ham antennas kind of bending in the wind. This thing doesn't bend at all, boy. It's as rigid as it can be.
This is probably the biggest trap you've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. And it's heavy because all that wire in there. Because, again, because of the frequency, you got to have a certain length of wire for the thing to be resonant. So
how long is the wire in?
I got no idea. There's lots of it rolled around in a big coil,
What does it weigh?
Probably 20 pounds.
Oh, that's not bad.
Compared to a ham antenna, ham antenna doesn't weigh anything. Like a 2-meter repeater antenna, things like that, they don't weigh anything. This thing probably weighs 4 or 5 times what a ham antenna does.
Let's say that someone sends you an MP3 file about some sort of announcement. Is the computer remotely programmed?
No, we don't have it quite that fancy yet. We could do that. They would send us an MP3, and we'd probably get an email attachment, and we'd take that and just take it over to where the computer is at the transmitter and just flip it in with the rest of them. We do have some overrides. For example, we have a weather service radio in there with the alert thing on it. So if we get a weather alert or whatever, the weather radio will come on and rebroadcast the National Weather Service until that alert is over. And then it'll automatically go back to the announcements. So that way people get attuned to it and say, oh, well, if I hear the weather radio on there, that means there's something up with the weather as compared to an announcement. And we don't have to do anything with that. That's all automated.
Use any compression?
We do have a broadcast quality compression amplifier prior to the transmitter. And that again, helps in our how people can hear us because most of these stations don't do that. So we do a few extras that you wouldn't normally get in a standard TIS station. I don't know that the group that's running it, the nonprofit organization is actually known as the Emergency Operations Center. They do under their trade name of Information Radio. That's how people know it here in Dayton is Information Radio. It's a great thing, for amateur radio organizations or people who are interested in radio to do. It's a great thing for their community because the governmental entities like the idea, and they're the ones that hold the license, but they don't really want to fool with programming the thing. So if you get somebody that's interested in radio that can engineer up the thing and has the time that they want to commit to, say, let's really make this thing quality, they could do it and be it's right up the alley for hams.
Is there a lot of paperwork?
There was, but again, we just had a company that specializes in this stuff, had them send the paperwork through the FCC. There now.
We've been talking about the ins and outs of Travel Information Stations, TIS, but I understand that the travel information station your company manages and programs is actually going to put into good use during the Hamvention in mid-May.
Well, we do. And again, it's just another local event that's happening in this area that draws a lot of people. So one of the things that we'll be doing with it is just giving people, the location of the event, the times of the event, and directions on how to get to it from any number of the different interstate routes. And we did that a little bit last year. Last year we had Gordon West actually record up a thing. We sent him the directions and put him on there. So we're just doing it again this year. I'm not sure who's going to be doing the recording, but that'll be the idea is to, again, just let the general public, the hams know how to get there, that, again, anybody running through the Dayton area, who knows? You know, they might have an interest in ham radio, and they pick up on that and may head out to the Hair Arena. And there is another station on 1610 in Troy, Ohio, which is up north of us. So by the time you get to Interstate 70, our south of Dayton station is knocking heads with theirs at about I-70, at least at 75. Now, you get further west on 70, yeah, and further east on 70, yes. Our main area is Interstate 75 and Interstate 675 and U.S. Route 35. All those routes and stations can be heard on quite clearly. We're hoping to do some other management things and perhaps move the Troy station to a different frequency, but that may or may not happen before hamvention in any case.
I've been speaking today with Norm Schrein, KA8PGJ, whose company programs the 1610 Traveler Information Station out of Kettering, Ohio. If you're going to be at the hamvention the weekend of May 15th, you'll want to tune it in and see if you can hear it. For the Rain Report, I'm Hap Holly, KCNRP in Chicago.
Editorial note. Be advised that securing a license than legally operating a travel information station like the one described in this interview is not as easy as it may sound. We suggest you familiarize yourself with Part 90 of the FCC regulations to get the whole story. The Rain Report is copyright 2004 Rain, all rights reserved. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN.